from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Alrighty, welcome. We've got a big show ahead of us tonight. We've covered this topic on the program before, and I thought I would give you an update on it. It says here, a New York judge has refused to throw out a $100 million lawsuit brought by the family of a man who committed suicide after police, accompanied by a camera crew from Dateline NBC to catch a predator, showed up at his house to arrest him. The lawsuit brought by the sister of former Kaufman County, Texas District Attorney Louis Bill Condra Jr. alleges NBC and police acted with deliberate indifference to Condra and that the cops had a duty to protect him, she says. Apparently unable to face the humiliation of the public spectacle that faced him, Condra took his own life. I thought I would bring on Stephanie Good tonight. She is a author, New York Times bestselling author, attorney, and an expert on the subject of catching sexual predators, of course, with the books that she has written and the, you know, firsthand knowledge that she has. Steph, how are you?
I'm good, Dana. How are you?
Not too bad. $100 million. There's several different aspects that we can talk about in the first segment of the show tonight. But before we get to that, that's the main reason I brought you on. I haven't had you on the show for a little while. I've been bad. I thought what I would do is, with everything that's been happening in Aruba, and of course you're the one of the co-authors of that best-selling book, Aruba, I thought I would get your take on the Joran confessions and everything else that's going on there. I'm going to have Jossie Manser on a little bit later tonight to give us an update. But what do you think what's been happening on that one happy island?
That one happy island should sink into the ocean for all I care, because this whole last business with Joran and his taped confession and the fact that they're really not doing much about it, that's absurd to me. I think that's more than enough evidence to pull him in, and I'm sure it would be in the United States. You know, I mean, that just really compounds the issue that they don't care. They're letting him get away with it. There's not much more that can be done except to find Natalie, and I think that he did a good job of making sure that that won't happen too. So, you know, I get angry about this issue because they've pushed it too far now. Once he has a taped confession, he should have been arrested.
No, there's no doubt, and we've discussed this several times, dozens of times on this program, that the justice system, if you want to call it that, in Aruba is, I don't know, it's very hard to explain and really difficult to understand, if at all possible. Should we be blaming those involved with the system, say Prosecutor Hans Moss, for example, or is he a guy that's his hands are tied and he's doing the best he can? I know we're speculating a bit here, but there's two sides to his story too.
Well, you know, it's hard to really know. It's hard to know what's going on there. You know, we went through this with Karen Jansen.
Yeah.
You know, it's very easy to say that he has his hands tied. I'm not so sure of that. And if that's true, then the whole system is corrupt and he's keeping his mouth shut like everybody else. You know, there comes a point in time when you have to stand up for what you believe in and stand up for justice, even if you're going against the system. I know it sounds easy, and I don't mean it to sound easy, but I think some of us have been in that position and we've done the right thing. There's been a cover-up from the beginning on this case. A lot of people have come and gone now, a lot of the, you know, people that were originally involved. And they all know the truth, I believe. I firmly believe that. And now with Joran confessing to his friend, you know, something needs to be done. So what if we say it's the Dutch government, you know, it's the Dutch part, it's their fault, and it's not the Arubans? I don't think it means anything. I don't think it makes any difference. The fact is this kid is Dutch. He lives in Aruba. Well, he's going to school, you know, of course, in Holland. But the whole system is corrupt. They've let this kid get away with what he's done for whatever reason. It went all the way up the chain of command, you know. I mean, they didn't call in the big head honchos in Holland those first couple of days when the Arubans were handling the case, and they, you know, very likely did something, found evidence, covered it up, you know. So, I mean, I'm convinced that they knew right off the bat what happened, and that they just did everything they could to sweep it under the rug.
Well, it's even more than speculation, and I don't like speculation, although we do that now and then, but some things are just so direct as far as what the evidence shows. But that's not the only reason why I brought you on here tonight. Let's get back to the Dateline incident as far as the lawsuit goes. The lawyer for the wife, Patricia Condrit, tells the media, and I quote, "This decision sends a strong message to law enforcement officials throughout the country that you may not subcontract your uniform, badge, and the oath you take." Now, I got to admit, when I read that, and again, we've discussed the whole Dateline thing before, and we'll do it again. But when I read that quote, it made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Your thoughts?
Oh, well, there's no question. This whole sting operation, you know, you've known for a long time how I feel about what they do. And you know that I'm really an advocate for putting sexual predators behind bars where they belong. But, you know, there is the right way of doing it and the wrong way of doing it. And, you know, people deserve their day in court. They deserve their, you know, due process rights. I think that the way that this whole thing evolved is disgraceful. I think it puts a black mark on the justice system as well as the media. Because, you know, the police are supposed to do their investigations with due diligence. They're supposed to be very careful. They're supposed to make, you know, line up all their ducks in a row and do it the right way. This and so is the media. You know, the media is supposed to report the news, not create it.
Right.
And so, you know, you put the two of them together, and it's really a travesty of justice the way that they handled this situation. Because, you know, I've been involved in a lot of arrests of sexual predators. This guy never even left his house to go to the meeting. He didn't show up.
Yeah.
You know, that right there, the fact that he was known to be an outstanding, you know, or an upstanding member of the community, the fact that he's been a district attorney and an assistant district attorney for many years, he should have been given his day in court. There was no reason for the house to be surrounded by a SWAT team. This was a suspected sexual predator who was talking to a child on the internet. It's a terrible thing if, in fact, he was guilty. But to have a media circus outside of his house, and to have, you know, as I said, SWAT teams out there, and they didn't even know if the guy, they didn't expect him to have a gun. Let's put it that way. It wasn't even as though they thought he would be armed. You know, I think the lawsuit should move forward. I don't think it should be dismissed. I think the judge has made a good decision in allowing it to move forward.
You made a good point when you said the media shouldn't create the news; it should report the news. And you know,
exactly.
And we could tackle that. Just that question alone, or that comment alone by you on several different fronts. But when you look at the public's want and the public's desire to have these types of programs, these types of high-profile news stories on the air, we have shows that go out and do investigations alongside of police investigations. The question question comes up later then is how can you impanel a jury when this has been so much in the media? What's a fair balance, Stephanie, when it comes to reporting the news, to creating the news, to doing a little bit of both? As you know, as an attorney yourself and as a media person yourself, there has to be a fine line drawn here because the public wants this other stuff, but then again, it's causing some problems.
Well, you know, you're talking about the difference between a reality show where you're seeing real events happening and, a criminal suspect being arrested because the reality show has created the scenario and instigated the arrest. You know, that's what I mean about creating the news. The media is supposed to be reporting the news. If the media goes out there now and sets up these stages and makes them dramatic, because Dateline did go out of their way to make this a dramatic event.
Right.
That's not the news, then. That's fake news, as far as I'm concerned. It's just that there's no balance there. This is something they're doing for ratings. It's a very dangerous thing. I've said this before, even not involving this particular case. It's a very dangerous situation that they're creating, and I just can't believe that they're still out there and they're still able to do this kind of thing. I've never liked the way they've handled these cases, and I see conflicts of interest in there and what they're doing. I also don't understand the police being willing to allow the way that Dateline actually influences them to stage these events.
And that's a good point. And if you're just joining us, our Stephanie Good is here. She's an attorney and, of course, New York Times bestselling author of the book Aruba, A Rush to Injustice, Law School 101, which some of these lawyers need to read, and, of course, Exposed, the harrowing story of a mother's undercover work with the FBI to save children from Internet sex predators. When you look at that and you look at the star aspect, and I hate to say it, I'm in law enforcement myself, but you have to wonder when you see some of these sheriffs and you see some of these investigators and you see the gleam in their eye when they stand in front of the camera and they get their 15 minutes of fame or they do whatever, I think their common sense sometimes gets thrown out with the chance of being on TV. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. And I think it's disgraceful. And I think that, you know, one of the telling things about this whole situation is that there were 24 men involved in this whole sting operation, and who showed up. You know, they arrived at the house to meet the little girls, and they weren't even prosecuted in the end. And so, you know, what they did, what these cops did, was they tainted an investigation for the purpose of getting their 15 minutes of fame. And they didn't think about procedure. They didn't think about their job. And, you know, some of this reminds me of Mike Nifon.
Yeah.
You know, because really what was happening here is you've got criminal suspects who are being named on television. There have been no criminal charges brought against this man. They show up at his house with a SWAT team with, I don't know how many police officers besides the SWAT team, with a camera crew standing on his front lawn.
Yeah.
He's just, you know, technically, he's a suspect. Nobody knows for sure, you know, what he's done, what the evidence is. You know, frankly, I've never seen anything on Dateline from Perverted Justice that showed a chat from beginning to end. And I would really like to see that. That's the difference between what they do and what I do. Because what I do is I do real cases. I don't do it for the purpose of being on television. I don't do it for the purpose of writing my book. That came along a couple of years after I started doing that work because I was asked to write about it. But what I do is very careful and very legal and according to procedure. And the media doesn't come in. And I'll tell you, there have been times when the media has asked me if they could be there for an arrest. The answer is always no.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, and you have to wonder the procedure and the policy is, you know, you take a SWAT team to an incident because any good law enforcement officer knows you always expect the unexpected. So you go to prepare. But having a camera crew on the front lawn while you're surrounding a residence is, you know, it just smacks of ratings and that's all. And it's
especially in the position that this man was in, having been an assistant district attorney, they actually, their interference probably caused the harm that came to him, because had the police come to his door, knocked on his door, or had they called him up and talked to him about the situation and asked him to show up the next morning to appear, even to be arrested, to voluntarily give himself up, I think the whole scenario would have been completely different. He would have called his attorney. It would have all happened the way it should have happened. But instead, this is a man who's a really, you know, a well-known man in his town, very respected person, and he sees all these people out on his front lawn, and he knows that when he walks out there, he's done. No matter what, when innocent or guilty, he's done. He's
right.
Finished. So he takes a gun, and he shoots himself in the head. You know, they really caused that to happen, as far as I'm concerned. And don't get me wrong, because, you know, I think sexual predators, you know, that's the way they go. Yeah, I don't, you know, if they all shoot themselves in the head once they're guilty, I couldn't care less. I know that sounds harsh, but these guys have a very high recidivism rate. They can't be cured. You know, once you've proven that they're guilty, I don't care what they do, you know, to themselves. But, you know, this situation was totally, totally uncalled for and totally inappropriate, and Dateline is very responsible for what happened, and the police, you know, are worse, because they knew, you know, they know what they're allowed to be doing, and what they did violated every code of ethics that they had.
There's a Pandora's box, some may say, that may come out of this case when it comes to media and the media reporting. Now, obviously, this is more targeted towards the sting aspect of it and how the arrest was going to be made, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, Stephanie, does this also now open up all types of investigative reporting to a lawsuit? Say somebody is monitoring you and I speaking this evening, and because of how we're speaking, we cause someone to harm themselves. Am I now liable for that, or am I stretching this too far? Is this going to be a bigger media clampdown on the media, I guess I should say, than just the Dateline shows?
I don't think so. I mean, there's a difference between talking about sexual predators, talking about the things that they do. If I was to turn around right now and name somebody, wait, I'm sorry, Dana, my dog is starting to growl behind me. I have to put her out of the room.
Sure.
If I was to talk about a specific person, you know, that I suspect, and we named him on the news,
right,
and he hasn't been arrested or, you know, prosecuted or anything like that, then we're leaving ourselves open.
Right.
We talk about the general subject area, no. But what Dateline was doing, they got into the discussion with the police of how to go about making an arrest.
Yep.
How to go about setting up the media presence for the arrest, and they reported on camera the man's name, and they showed everything as it was happening. This is a man who was not officially even named a criminal suspect, you know, technically. So there was no filing of any charges against him. That leaves the media open to something. If I show up in front of your house with cameras and start, you know, talking about you as a criminal and what I believe you've done, and there are no charges brought, well, I'm in trouble. I mean, I would like to hope I'd be in trouble for that. And this is one of the things that I was mentioning before about Mike Nifon talking about the Duke Three before they were even named as suspects, but talking about them as though they were guilty of rape. That's why he's not DA anymore. And this is the kind of case that, you know, reeks of just very bad choices, very bad ethics, you know, totally unethical behavior. I think that, you know, the media can draw a very fine line. They can do a lot of great reporting of news without crossing that line, and they have done it in the past very often, but I think with reality TV, we're seeing that sensationalism seems to be more important than just reporting the facts. And Dateline is creating, they're creating news. It's fake news, you know, it's not real.
If you're just tuning in,
it's something that would have never happened had Dateline not been there. It would have never been. This man would have had a lawyer, and he would have, you know, given himself up, and he would have gone through the process, the legal process, and instead, you know, he found it necessary to kill himself.
Yeah, it went to a tragic ending, for sure. If you're just tuning in, our Stephanie Good is here. She's an attorney and New York Times bestselling author. And we're talking about the judge refusing to throw out the lawsuit against Dateline NBC and the To Catch a Predator segment that allegedly resulted in the death of a suspect who took his own life. When we get back to ethics and the responsibility of media as far as their reporting goes, and when somebody's named a suspect or when they're not named a suspect, a little later on I'll have Joel Brodsky on, who is Drew Peterson's attorney, and all you have to do is turn on cable television and you'll see Drew Peterson on the air all the time. Yes, he's been named a suspect, but it's been quite some time and no formal charges have been filed against him. When should the media, Stephanie, finally say, okay, you know, we've beat this story to death, let's get on to something more important? Because you and I both know there's a ton of stories out there, there's a ton of missing people, other stories out there that, you know, there's a serial rapist in Reno, Nevada, we don't hear much about anymore, that time on air could be covered better than watching Drew Peterson go and buy groceries.
That's very true. I wish I had a definite answer for you. You know, they beat it to death. Sometimes you want a story to be out there for a long time. We want to hear about what's going on with Natalie Holloway because the case isn't closed yet. We want to keep the story alive. I think some people don't want to hear about it anymore unless there's some big news to tell.
Right.
But, you know, following a guide to the grocery store, who cares? the sad part about that is I'm wondering, who is this appealing to?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to watch that. I turn that stuff off. There are a lot of news channels that I won't even turn on anymore because it's not news. It's not interesting, and it's garbage. I don't have an answer. I'd like to see some of the old-time investigative reporting again, where you actually see something you don't know about and you don't see over and over and over again.
Yeah, and that's right, and keeping on and keeping on and keeping on with the story, you would think that the public would finally say that's enough, but then again, it must be difficult for cable news outlets to decide how they're going to run a story or how they're going to cover it and go from there. But getting back to Dateline here again, you would think that things would get toned back a little bit after all of this negative publicity, and there's been a ton of it, not mm-hmm. just this case, but they keep going on and on. What do you think they're doing that for?
I think maybe the craziness has boosted their ratings.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's the only answer I can come up with, and I don't understand why they're still doing things like this. I mean, I don't know if they'll ever do something quite like this case again, with Conrad's case. But to be honest with you, I have to say that, and maybe it's because I go after sexual predators that I work in that area of law, you know, and I can't stand even watching the show. You know, I when they go after these guys, frankly, I don't even know if they're still doing it because I don't watch it anymore.
Right.
I haven't in a very long time because it's the same thing over and over. And I get very upset about it because they don't do it the right way and because what I see is, in my opinion, is entrapment a number of times, you know, there. And I don't think we need to see it over and over and over again, the same thing with just different guys. It's the same story, different day. And I don't see what the attraction is anymore for people. They're not learning anything new. They're also really not learning anything except the fact that there are sexual predators on the internet, and it's a really big deal. It's a situation that is not overblown. That some people say it is, but it's not. There's a never-ending supply of sexual predators out there. my story is completely different than perverted justice. And in fact, there is a documentary that will be on next month. It will be on April 15th. It's a one-hour documentary about my work with the FBI. It's going to be on WE Television, Women's Entertainment Network, at 10 p.m. on April 15th. And it will tell, you know, from some of it, I think, will really give people a completely different perspective of the way this works and the way that it should work. And you will see other things that you've never seen on Dateline. You know, you will, because I use real telephone conversations. We tape conversations with sexual predators, and those are going to air. The real ones are going to air on my documentary. You're going to see real chats. You're going to see actual suspects who have been arrested and who have gone to prison. But these are cases that take months to work on.
Right.
They're not one-night sting operations where a guy shows up at a house and we lure him in with, you know, all sorts of, you know, do you want to come and do this to me? Do you want to come and do that to me? These are months and months. Some of them take up to 9 months to a year for a case to go through the process where we're going to make an arrest. And that's the way the judicial system really needs to work. And this is the problem with Dateline. It's not about justice. It's not about the judicial system. It's about ratings. It's about, you know, let's get that excitement out there. Let's get people all worked up. And you know, I just don't get it. I don't get what the excitement is about that for people to tune into it. I think it should have been shut down a long time ago. Sorry to be so negative about it.
Well, you're not being negative, and of course we'll follow that case real closely. Steph, thank you. It's great. You dot the I's, cross the T's, and you take those dirtbags off the Internet, put them in jail where they should be.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me again.
Nice having you on again. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That's our Stephanie Good, New York Times bestselling author and attorney, and make sure and tune in to her documentary coming up on Women's Entertainment. That's next month. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be back in just a minute with the managing editor, and I always get flack for this, of Diario. Did I say that right? In Aruba, we're going to get an update as far as what's going on there. Is the vice president there? Is Joran van der Sloot in a mental institution? We're going to find out from Jossie Mansour here in just a minute on Scared Monkeys Radio.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. There's been some news out of Aruba lately, and I haven't had my next guest on for a little while, and I thought I would bring back Jossie Mansour, the managing editor of Diario, to give us a couple of updates. Hi, Jossie.
Hi.
Nice to have you back on the program again.
One
of the stories that has come out of Aruba in the last couple of days, and I don't think it has anything to do with the Holloway investigation, but interesting nevertheless, is to see Air Force Two, the plane of the Vice President of the United States, touching down in Aruba. What can you tell us?
Well, it did touch down yesterday, 2 days ago. It's still there. Apparently it's leaving today or left today or sometime. We don't know who was on board. We know it was the Air Force Two plane. I mean, we did have a picture taken of it at the airport, but that's all we know about it. We don't know who was in it, who came to visit Aruba, what the purpose was of this visit. I mean, the only thing we know is that it came.
Well, with Aruba, of course, speculation is running rampant as far as why the plane was there, but it's interesting to see. Of course, your paper will follow up with anything if they find out?
Oh, sure, we sure will. We have people working on it right now.
Now, there's some political tension going on with Venezuela and other places right now, and the reports in the news is that people are quite nervous as far as what's going on. Are the people of Aruba concerned as far as the political atmosphere that's happening down there?
Not particularly. We are interested in what's going on, because whatever happens in Venezuela, because of its nearness to Aruba, affects us in one way or another. I know there was an incident in Ecuador where the Colombian army apparently went in and killed a number of the guerrillas of Colombia, the FARC members, including the number two man. And that Chavez has been yelling his head off about, don't try this with us, don't come into Venezuela. In other words, admitting that there may be guerrilla camps in Venezuela. So why else would he say that? Why else would Colombia come into Venezuela?
Of course, with Hugo Chavez, anything that can get him on the news or onto onto television to make him look like the great leader, he'll do. But it must bring some concern when he's massing his armies. But anyway, getting on to the Holloway investigation, some stories surfaced here recently that Joran van der Sloot was actually being treated in a mental hospital, a psychiatric facility. What can you update us?
That's just a rumor. I mean, it came out in a local paper here, and people in Holland quoted the local paper. But when consulted, when consultations took place with the family, they denied it absolutely. From what we know, Joran is in Germany. He's staying with some kind of an uncle that he has over there, because his lawyer advised him not to walk the streets in Holland, because there was real imminent danger to him, and that the best thing he could do was just go away from the place for a while. Which he did. He's in Germany, as far as we are concerned.
Now, since the De Vries tapes and then the decision not to rearrest Joran, has that calmed down some, or is there still many questions as far as what's happening? We haven't heard much from Prosecutor Hans Moss, and he's in this position right now where no matter what he says, he's going to be scrutinized for this. And I'll ask you this question, Jossie. I'm not sure if you can answer. What, if anything, is being done with this investigation right now?
Well, according to the prosecution, they are still working on the case. They have to make a decision, I think, in a short while, or in a medium-term while, to bring charges against this case and go to court. But considering what is done already, in other words, asking for the rearrest of Joran, being denied, and then appealing and being denied again, I think he shut all doors for that possibility. With what could he go to court with?
Right. As far as the evidence goes, I'm assuming they're going to keep whatever they have now to the vest, close to the vest, because there's been so many screw-ups there as far as, you know, releasing things and then not being able to, you know, follow through with any of the information they have, saying there's new evidence when there isn't any new evidence. But and then it brings to the whole story, as far as this case goes, Jossie, the two sides of it, one, the investigation. And one, the bigger part, you know, is there corruption involved? Going back to the very early days of the investigation, Jossie, where Van der Straaten ordered that the two security guards be arrested, and we don't hear much about that anymore. How big is this picture, and will we ever get answers?
Well, I think that we have to get answers. I mean, there are other leads coming up after the Vries tape aired. I think that the possibilities of a solution are there. I'm convinced that there was a big cover-up from the beginning. Who's involved in that? How far does it go? Does it go only over here to the politicians locally? Does it go to Holland? We don't know. It's very strange to me, and it may be coincidental, but it's very strange that Moss comes here from Holland directly, and the first thing he does is make some very foolish steps, take some very foolish steps in the case, and now has forbidden for Joran to be rearrested, because there can be no further appeals according to the Code of Criminal Procedure here, and Joran cannot be rearrested.
But now, if there's enough evidence, and this is where many people don't understand the process or the system in Aruba, I should say, if they decide there is enough evidence and they were to file charges, for lack of a better term, what's the procedure there?
Well, they just file charges. They go to court with him. They argue the court, the prosecution against the defense attorneys like anywhere else. And the decision will be left up to the judge here. There's no jury system in Aruba. Just a judge, one man that weighs all the evidence presented, all the arguments for and against, and then makes his own decisions and gives a ruling on it.
You know, when we bring up names like van der Straaten, do we hear much from him anymore? Is he even on the island of Aruba?
I think he's back on the island, but I don't think he's active here. He's not officially engaged in anything. He was in Bonaire for a while, and they hired him over there as the chief of police. And I understand that he has, in the meantime, complied with this contract and come back to Aruba.
But then when we see this, again, if you're just joining in, Jossie Manser is here, the managing editor of Diario. We're talking about the Holloway investigation. But when you see these names brought up, Van der Straaten, Gerald Dompeg, whoever, and then all of a sudden it seems to die off for a while and then come back, and now the search for Natalie may be suspended with the boat and the crew leaving home or going home. It leaves a sour taste in the mouth of many people that are watching this case, Jossie. And I guess, and maybe an unfair question to you, but is Aruba basically in the position they're damned if they do and damned if they don't?
I don't think so. We're very interested for this case to be solved. I think that the majority of the people here have the feeling that it can be solved. And the majority of the people here know that very big mistakes and steps of cover-ups have been taken in the beginning. I mean, they're no fools. They read the papers here. They know what's going on. So I don't think that there is an indifference on the part of the people here, but there's not much they can do about it.
Your paper, Diario, you've covered this story from day one, and you've worked very hard, and family members themselves have told me that they owe a great deal of gratitude to you. How would you finally like to put an end to the story, or if you were able to write a final chapter to it, Jossie, what would you like that to be? I know we don't know it yet, but what would you like it to be?
Well, I would like it to be a solution, knowing the solution and presenting it to the people of Aruba and the U.S. and everywhere else in the world, that the case has been solved, that whatever happened to Natalie is now known, and that the guilty parties will face the severity of the law here. That's the way we would like to end it.
And, of course, the investigation itself, as my last question to you, and what went wrong right from the beginning should be another aspect to this. Bringing justice is one thing, but making sure something like this doesn't happen again should be another. Your thoughts?
Yes, of course. I think that they should learn from the mistakes here, whether intentional or not, and then that they have to be avoided in whatever case. I hope it never happens again, but if there is supposed to be another case, or if another case does happen, they should learn from their past mistakes and avoid them in the future.
What can you tell us? Has it been very quiet on the Jorn van der Sloot front? Is it basically, like you say, his lawyer tells him to not come back for a while, let things calm down, or are you hearing some scuttlebutt as far as something else that may be happening?
No, I don't hear anything else happening. I know that he was advised by his lawyer and I suppose by family members to go away from Holland for a while, because in Holland he was running a big risk. People were very mad at him after seeing the videotape of De Vries and hearing how he spoke about this girl. This girl is dead. This girl was dead because he was with her at the time of her decease. And people are very, very upset about that in Holland and here.
Absolutely. That's well said, as always. Jossie, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Jossie Manser, managing editor of Diario. Yes, do we need more answers? Absolutely. Can Jossie give them right now? I guess he can't, but we'll stay on top of this story. I sat down this afternoon with Joel Brodsky, the attorney for Drew Peterson, talking about another high-profile case that's in the news. There's been lots about Drew in the cable news front here in the last little while, and I thought that I would share my conversation I had with attorney Brodsky with you right now. Hi, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. I happened to catch an episode of Geraldo, or whatever it's called, At Large with Geraldo, or Geraldo is Large, I don't know, whatever it's called, on Fox News last night. And I happened to see Rick Mims, and you all know Rick Mims is that media wannabe that you see on different shows talking about the disappearance of Stacey Peterson, and in particular the investigation into her disappearance, and former Bolingbrook Sergeant Police Police, Police Sergeant Drew Peterson. Anyway, what concerned me and what sent up a bunch of red flags, and I was very disappointed in Geraldo last night, was the tabloid-type television interview that he was doing where Mims was talking about, after Peterson's guns were taken, how Peterson rolled up his pant leg, and there he had a pistol strapped to his pant leg, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is what he said, and he said they never got this one. And then he continued on talking about a business partner that apparently has committed suicide, and there's another investigation going on. And then, of course, Mark Furman is on the phone, and he said something that sent up a bunch of red flags, too, saying that police departments all around Bolingbrook are puzzled why Drew Peterson hasn't been arrested to date, because there's more than enough evidence. And I thought, what the heck, I'm going to bring on Joel Brodsky, attorney for Drew Peterson, and we're going to talk about this. Hi, Joel.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing not too bad. Now, this, you know, I know this story has been spun every direction, and you and I have talked about this many times, and if charges are filed, I'm sure you'll take those charges to court and defend your client the best you can. However, if I was the Illinois State Police, and there was an individual on Fox News talking about Drew Peterson having a gun or keeping a gun that was supposed to be seized or whatever, I would have executed another search warrant and gone and looked for that gun. So there has to be a credibility issue here with Mr. Mims.
Yeah, Rick Mims has many credibility issues. I was told that in his appearance on Geraldo's, I've got a couple of calls. I didn't see it, but people told me he looked kind of stoned or drunk or some such thing. But that aside, I was, if Drew had a gun, I'm sure that Rick would have told the police a long time ago, and that they would have come out and seized it. They came there and executed a search warrant for specifically for all weapons. So I really can't believe that they would have missed a weapon at Drew's house. And now, because his FOID card's been revoked, it'd actually be a crime for Drew to be in possession of a firearm. So I can guarantee you he's not. That's anybody's concern. But Rick has his own credibility problems. I'd be happy to go into them. I was contacted by Rick Mims' ex-wife about 3 weeks ago, and she told me that Rick, she calls him Slick Rick, because says he's a hustler, but owes her $30,000 in back child support, and he never made a payment, even though he collected $20,000 from this National Enquirer interview. So,
well, again,
Rick is just not a credible person.
Exactly, and it comes to credibility, yet these news organizations keep using him, and it's difficult for you to come on and have to counter it, or sometimes I'm sure you don't because you're more interested in the case. But let's talk about briefly, there was a court order here last week that all property seized from Drew Peterson was supposed to be returned within 30 days, or words to that effect. Is that correct?
Exactly. I'm sorry. If I can't, very simple. I mean, this is what I think really tells the tale. This court order. Here you have a judge. Now, this judge heard the ex parte, the secret testimony from the investigators. He reviewed all the search warrant applications or affidavits of the police in support of the search warrant, which lays out the evidence. And after reviewing all that, he still decided to return all the cars and other items, including the guns, to Drew. So I think that if you read between the lines there, and I don't think you have to read too hard between the lines there, you have a judge that I think is telling us that the case against Drew really isn't all that strong, if there's any case at all.
Something else that calls to questions of credibility, not only of the investigation, but of some police officers or police departments, is the fact that a former LAP homicide detective, when we could do a show just on Mark Furman, is able to come on network television and say that he is hearing from other departments that an arrest should have been made long ago, and that takes away from the professionalism of any investigation if this sort of thing's happening. Either there's some serious leaks or some serious misinformation out there.
Yeah, well, Mark Furman's also has some credibility issues. But that aside, the real point of an arrest is to get a conviction, and there's no reason to make any arrest without being able to follow through and get somebody convicted. And the police may be wanting to have to arrest it simply because it may give them some sort of satisfaction. But the state's attorney is not going to approve any arrest or approve any charges unless they feel that they can prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. Not that I doubt Mark Furman, despite his credibility problems, that the police may want to see an arrest, but the state's attorney simply is not going to approve charges unless they feel they can prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt, and I'm sure they don't. Otherwise, we would have seen an arrest or we would have seen an indictment by now.
Is there a response that you can give as far as the networks reporting Drew and he hiring a image consultant, and most recently the day in the life of Drew on Greta Van Susteren the other night? And you and I have talked about this as far as a client in the media and the strategy around that. What are your thoughts? I happened to catch it here the other night.
Well, here, Glenn Selig, we've been consulting with Glenn for over a month and a half, almost 2 months now. The reason we consulted with him was not as an image consultant. That's not what Glenn is. But in dealing with these media outlets, with people like Fox and the other media companies, they have a very it's a whole new area. It's something that I have no experience in, and Drew had no experience in. There's a language. The media has a language of their own, and different ways of operating. So we consulted with him, so we can understand what was going on. So we knew how to deal with them and how to talk to them, and what type of assurances we needed to get when there were promises made. Glenn had nothing to do with what's going on with Drew's appearance on the Today Show or the Day in the Life. The way Drew presented himself in his Day in the Life of Drew Peterson, he's merely consulted with us on how to deal with the media. So, I mean, he's not an image consultant. If anybody thinks we're trying to present a false image of Drew Peterson, that's simply not the case. What you're seeing and what you saw in the Day in the Life, if anybody watched it on Greta Van Susteren's show, and either on Friday or it's going to be a little bit more on Monday, what you're seeing is the way Drew is in his house. That's, you know, when he's not out in front of the cameras, and when he's just being a normal dad raising four kids, and presents a different image, but it's the real true image. It's not something that's made up. This is the guy.
So no Playboy bunny attorney on one arm and a Hollywood contract on the other arm.
Not even close. even though I'm sure it's not beyond Drew to date a Playboy bunny at some point in time, if the opportunity ever came his way. I think he said that with raising two teenage boys and two preschoolers, if he's able to get 3 or 4 hours every 2 weeks to get away from the house, that's a lot. And anybody who's ever raised young children can sympathize with that. I mean, that rings very, very true. There's simply not a lot of time when you're alone raising four children. So he's not living the Playboy life by any means. He's living the housewife life, so to speak.
Okay, and just getting back one more time, just before I let you go, Joel, and I appreciate you coming on, as far as Mr. Mims and his allegation that Drew Peterson did keep back a revolver and is still in possession of a revolver after those were taken from him, there's no truth to that?
None whatsoever. Not only did he not have one before, but after the police pulled his FOID card, his firearm owner ID card, I reiterated, immediately called up and contacted him and reiterated in case he had purchased something or happened to get one in the interim. I mean, I'm not monitoring the guy's behavior every day. To reiterate to him that if there is anything in the house, get it out now. Don't give the police any excuse to arrest you.
Exactly.
He said that he did not have any guns, and he reconfirmed that to me. So there was unarmed, which isn't probably the greatest thing I like to have out there, because we do get death threats, but it's the fact is that it's illegal for him to own a firearm or possess a firearm, and he's not in violation of the law.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Joel.
My pleasure. Take care now.
Take care. Bye-bye. You know, the bottom line is investigating this case properly determining what happened to Stacey Peterson, what happened to the wife who had passed away and is not able to speak for herself. We need to do that. We need to help. And that's just it. But having Rick Mims coming on your program is not doing that. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. And in our continuing coverage of the Natalie Holloway disappearance, and we did a segment on this last show, and we're going to do a segment on it again tonight. There was another one of those travel shows in New York City over the weekend, and I thought I would bring on one of the Scared Monkeys hotshot who happened to be there. Hi there.
Hi, Dana.
How are you doing?
Really tired, trying to recuperate.
I'll bet you are. Now, you and I were talking off air a little bit. Big difference between Boston and New York, true?
Huge difference.
Yeah, is it that scary in New York? Like, I've walked the streets of Boston, and I've felt okay. New York, I don't know. I think I'd want to be packing a piece.
Wow, it is kind of scary. You have homeless people all over the place. People tend to walk with their heads down a lot. So to give them, you know, literature or tote bags or whatever, it's hard. It's really hard.
Now, we've covered the aspect of why you folks, and you do it so diligently, go to these travel shows. It's an education process. But, you know, when you start to do this traveling, obviously there's costs involved. And to get the message out that, you know, no tourism unless there's justice for Natalie, and I'm paraphrasing here, it's important for your group to be able to say that. And I know in Boston, you have a certain individual group of people, and in New York, you had a different group. I understand, even at the table, how did it go for you?
It went great, as far as those people that were out there. Like I said, the two shows were totally different. New York had totally different people in their Aruba booth than Boston did. So I'm assuming they sent home who was there in Boston and replenished. Rob Smith was definitely not there, mm-hmm. And he's the important guy.
And why do you think he wasn't there? Are you attributing some responsibility for that?
I'd like to say we were. I'm thinking maybe they went home to have a powwow, you know?
Maybe. And we're speculating a little bit, but hey, if they did, great. You know, I just, before I ask you about the show itself, I just had Jossie Mansour on a few minutes ago, and one of the questions I asked at the end, and I'm not sure if he liked it or not, but I asked anyway, when we talked about Aruba itself, I said, Jossie, do you think Aruba is pretty much damned if they do and damned if they don't, regardless of what happens in this situation? And what I meant by that is the damage irreparable. Or is there something that Aruba can do to fix this? Because in my opinion, I've been criticized for this before, is that there are good people on the island of Aruba. It's just this whole investigation, this whole corruption, whatever you want to call it, has just been a mess, and they have to fix it before they can be fixed. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. They can renew themselves. I mean, sure, it's a little bit late.
Yeah.
They should have done it in the beginning, but, you know, if everything came out now, they could save some face, yes.
It's interesting when a group of yours, your group goes from city to city to city to get the message out, what the response was when you spoke to the locals, so to speak, or people attending that show. How did it go this time?
This time it went really well. We met people who have been reading Scared Monkeys diligently from the very beginning. Never signed up for Scared Monkeys, but they read it. We also added two to our group, which was really nice. Don't know what else to tell you there.
we
really couldn't do much. Like I said, the people walked face down. So it was a tough place to be.
A tough sell?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe it's a mentality of, a huge megatropolis like, I'm not sure if that's even a word, but anyway, you know what I mean, of New York. And I imagine they walk around a lot with their heads down or their faces down. Red sending me an email here. It says, Rob Smith was frighty scared. I don't know. and that could be, but obviously you guys are, you're doing a great job. You're doing what you believe in and what many others believe in. You deserve a rest right now, but what's next?
What's next? The St. Louis show is coming up. I'm not going to be able to make that. I'm out of funds right now. And starting a new job on the 8th of March, which is when the show starts. So, yeah, I won't be to that one. But I will still keep carrying my tote bags. I will still keep wearing my sweatshirt. You get a lot of people who look at this stuff and come up to you and start talking. That's what happened to us on the way home from New York yesterday. As a matter of fact, when I got home from New York, my car was locked up behind a gate, and I couldn't go anywhere. So I went and I got a policeman to help me. And I really think because of the shirt that I was wearing and the talk that I had with the policeman about Natalie is why everything went so smooth with him getting my car out and letting me go home without a ticket.
That's great.
It was definitely good. I guess his sergeant, which is a woman, helped with the case very early on, went up there for the family.
Right.
So I went and I gave him a t-shirt and a sweatshirt and a tote, and I said, bring this back to your sergeant.
That's great to hear. Listen, just before I let you go, for those that aren't sure what the message is, briefly share it with us when you go to these travel shows, what that message is. I know it, but share it with the audience.
Well, it's pretty much to tell people what to expect when going to a foreign country, especially somewhere like Aruba. You know, we want them to be safe. We want them to come home alive. We don't want anything to happen to them like what happened to Natalie. It's two totally different animals. You know, you have no right, pretty much.
Yep.
And justice for Natalie. You know, stay away until we get something.
Yeah, and that's so important. And like I've said before, I think the majority of the people on Aruba feel the same way. It's the powers to be that need the lesson, that's for sure. Thank you, Hotshot.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's so, it's so important. And however you look at this, the message is justice. Justice is served in many forms. I've said it before. I'll say it again. And the justice that needs to be served is to bring Natalie Holloway home. My name's Dana Pretzer. Thank you to all my guests and all my listeners tonight, whether you're listening live or on the podcast. Remember, our website is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can listen to podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, whatever. And of course, don't forget scaredmonkeys.com. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.